gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
En fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie, et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi, et perdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne, il se recule, et la foule vient me jeter entre ses bras.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at KBOO.FM. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Cannabis, marijuana, ganja, weed, devil's lettuce. It's now legal in 45 U.S. states, in one form or another. Five states just passed new legislation recently. Canada, they legalized for recreational use in 2018. Billions of dollars in tax revenue are being generated. Clearly, the people have spoken. I'm Trevor Collins. This is Times Like Now. My guest today is Paul Stanford. Paul is a pioneer of cannabis and hemp activism going back to the 1980s. He's been instrumental in getting legalization in Oregon and Washington and has traveled the country and the world working with the likes of Willie Nelson and Woody Harrelson towards ending cannabis prohibition. I sat down and spoke with Paul just recently. Thank you, Paul Stanford, for your time and for joining me today.
You're welcome, Trevor. Thanks for having me.
So starting with your long history in hemp and cannabis work, starting with the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation. Now, if I'm correct, is that medical, as in medical cannabis? And when did that start?
Well, I started the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF, in 1999. And I started it as a 501c3, and it was a nonprofit organization. I was already producing a cable access television show, and I had a history of importing hemp and working on marijuana legalization. So when I started THCF, I'd actually already been active for almost 20 years as an activist in cannabis legalization. But in doing my TV show, when medical marijuana became legal, I had a lawyer and a doctor co-hosting the show. The doctor was Dr. Philip Levesque, and soon thereafter, people started showing up at our TV studio as soon as medical marijuana became legal in Oregon on May 1st of 1999, asking our doctor to help them get their medical marijuana permit. And pretty soon, that became a business. As soon as we opened in Oregon, we had people coming from Washington asking if we could help them get medical marijuana authorizations. And so soon I opened in the Seattle area in 2001, and then opened in Hawaii in 2002, and in Colorado in 2003. And altogether, I've worked with about 35 different doctors in 60 different cities in 10 different states, and have helped about 270,000 Americans get their medical marijuana permits through that business.
Wow. I'm sorry I'd have to stop you. That is amazing, amazing. I wish I had an applause that I could give you for that, and that is amazing. So in addition to that organization, you are also part of or president of the Campaign for Restoration and Regulation of Hemp. Tell me a little bit about that organization and what you do with that.
I started Campaign for the Restoration and Regulation of Hemp in conjunction with trying to legalize marijuana in Oregon. I had begun working with a group of people in Oregon, the Oregon Marijuana Initiative, in 1984 when I moved to Oregon from Washington State. The time I was 24 years old. And they were working, and we put an initiative on the ballot in 1985 for a vote in 1986. And we lost overwhelmingly. The whole federal government came down on us. Nancy Reagan toured the state, and George H.W. Bush, or George Bush Sr., he was the vice president and in charge of the Office of National Drug Control Policy in the White House. And he toured the state for about 14 days as well to oppose our initiative. In doing that, I started to develop legislation to regulate the marijuana market. And starting in 1987, this wording went through over 150 different drafts with input from about 100 different people. And we failed to put it on the ballot in the 90s, but with the clinics generating significant income, it managed to put it on the ballot, pretty much financing it myself in 2012. And that's when the initiative was on the ballot in Washington and in Colorado. So the three initiatives were on the ballot, and we lost. That's kind of the history in a nutshell.
Right, right. So cannabis became legal in Washington State in what year?
It was voted in with 54% of the vote in 2012, in November 2012, and it became effective in about a month later. And at the same time in Colorado. And that's when our initiative, the one I financed in Oregon, lost. There was a group of people that financed the one in Washington, the Drug Policy Alliance, whose primary benefactor is George Soros and the Open Society Institute.
So tell me a little bit about why. Why has this been your passion and your drive for so long?
Well, at an early age, I saw that my cohorts in the early 70s, when I was a teenager, were using cannabis, and I used it, and I did research and saw that the effects of cannabis were far less deleterious than the effects of alcohol. And doing more research, I found it was relatively harmless, you know, and there was no conclusive science that it caused major health risks, as alcohol and tobacco definitely did. And then in learning the history of hemp and cannabis, I was motivated to work on legalizing those drugs. I also saw one of my major motivations as well was that the drug laws and cannabis laws were used against progressive activism, especially the anti-war movement. And so it just allowed the police to become corrupt as well. So I was motivated to work with the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws initially.
That is normal, right?
Yeah, normal. And so I was Washington State Normal Coordinator from 1982 to 1984. I wrote a letter and started talking to the folks in Washington, D.C., and the fellow who was their executive director, Kevin Zeese, said, "Would you be the state director?" And I said, "Okay." They sent me a big 16mm reel of the movie Reefer Madness. And so I started, I was an Evergreen State College student at the time. And so I started showing it at UW and Western Washington University, and just went around talking about setting up an initiative to legalize cannabis. I had met some activists working on an initiative project down in California, which is another story. But that's kind of what motivated me.
If by chance anyone listening has never seen nor heard of Reefer Madness, definitely recommend you do your own research on that one. Most recently, you've been involved with a lot of international and national travel before COVID, of course, hitting the road, hitting the air, and speaking to organizations and groups, again, spreading the word of cannabis and of hemp. Tell me a little bit about some of your international travels. Where have you been, and what have you been saying?
Well, I've been speaking at U.S. events going back to the late 80s and the Great Midwest Marijuana Harvest Fest, which was the largest event in the United States back in the late 80s and early 90s, and also worked with the folks at the Seattle Hemp Fest. But after losing that election in 2012, folks that put on an event in Spain called Expo Grow invited me to come and be the keynote speaker there. And they flew my wife and I there, and it's right on the border with France in the Basque Country, in this town called Irun. The convention center is literally like 100 yards from, or 100 meters from, the French border. And those cannabis laws are more strict in France, so it kind of catered to both French and Spanish audience. And so I was keynote speaker there in 2013, and they invited me back in 2014. And then I started getting invitations to speak at events like Expo Weed in Santiago, Chile. Chile has an incredible marijuana legalization movement. In fact, they've had over 200,000 and as many as 450,000 people marching in their annual global cannabis march that happens in early May each year. But those things were curtailed by the pandemic this year, of course. But there's a huge event down there called Expo Weed in Santiago. So I spoke there, and I spoke at the initial Expo Cannabis in Uruguay, just when cannabis became legal in Uruguay in 2014. I spoke in both of those places in 2014 and 15, and in Buenos Aires at an event called Expo Haze. I also had a real interesting trip to Japan in 2016 to the International Hemp Environmental Forum that was held in Kyoto. And probably the most notable thing about that is that the Japanese Prime Minister's wife was the keynote speaker there, and the Prime Minister of Japan, the longest one since the World War, was Shinzo Abe, and his wife is Ikie Abe. And so they recently, just about 2 months ago, he stepped down, and he has ulcerative colitis, and in fact it's not known in Japan, but he uses medical cannabis for his ulcerative colitis. But she spoke at the Environmental Hemp Forum there in Kyoto in July 2nd of 2016. It's an honor to be invited to these things, and I enjoy travel and culture, and
it certainly is an international issue and cause now, and I'm glad to see that you're a part of it and that it's making such headway. Speaking of which, 5 new states in the United States. What are we up to now? 45, I think, states have legalized in one, either medical or decriminalized, or at least, I know the number is very high. It's almost all the states now are in one way or another legalized.
Yeah, we won all 5 of the elections this November. And in South Dakota, they became the first state that legalized both medical and recreational at the same time. And they legalized recreational by 72%. And in Mississippi, there were two different initiatives on the ballot there, one that the people put on the ballot, and one that after the people qualified their initiative, the state legislature put on the ballot in the state of Mississippi. One was Initiative 65, and the other one was 65A. And 65A was much more restrictive, and 65 won with 71% of the vote. And so it's great to see these things happening. In some states, they've cheated them off the ballot. In Nebraska, they were on the ballot, but it's another story again. But they're going for medical in 2022, so time will tell. But it's great to see, and there's, you know, all sorts of other states looking toward 2022 as well already, from Florida and Arkansas to Oklahoma and Nebraska, of course.
I met a person from Arkansas, and he said Arkansas will be last, in his personal opinion. I think he was being offhanded about it, but he said it's pretty conservative and a difficult issue there to bring up. But he says when Arkansas makes that decision, that will be everybody, because they will be last, he says. Is there any signs of a federal a mandate or a federal legislation? Is there anybody writing one? Is there any talk of one?
Well, yeah, the most exciting one right now, and you know, it's the 1st of December here as we record this of 2020, is the MORE Act, which was drafted by the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, Jared Nadler, and it passed the House Judiciary Committee back in the spring, about 10 months ago. So it's been sitting ready for the legislature, the full House, to take up since then. And it's pretty exciting in that it would completely deschedule marijuana, take it off the schedule of controlled drugs, and it would expunge simple possession records as well. And so there's strong support in the Democratic caucus to do that. They said initially they're going to vote on it in September, and last week they announced they were going to vote on it this week. And so just as Mexico, one house of the Mexican bicameral legislature passed marijuana legalization about 2 weeks ago, it could be that one house of America's bicameral legislature will pass marijuana legalization this week. But there's been some opposition to it in light of the lack of passage of pandemic relief for unemployed workers and state and local governments. So I've seen them postpone this vote before. However, both in Mexico and here in the United States, it's unlikely to be taken up by the other half of the legislature, it being the, you know, the Senate here in the United States and the House of Delegates in Mexico. And so in both cases, the other house seems unlikely to pick up the ball and run with it. But there's a lot of talk about it being brought up in the next legislative session. In fact, the Senate sponsor of the MORE Act was Kamala Harris. And so
I've heard of her.
She's our vice president-elect, obviously. And so she has backed Biden's move, saying that, you know, she's just in favor of decriminalization. So I think there's possibility, especially if the two Georgia Senate races that are up for a runoff election in early January, if both of those swing to the Democrats, which seems almost miraculous, but if they both swing to the Democrats, then the Democrats will have 50-50 control, and with Harris as the vice president, then I think it's more likely we'll see some sort of movement on marijuana legalization. As long as The specter of Mitch McConnell continues to control the United States Senate. It's unlikely that he will allow marijuana legalization to move forward. He said so many times.
He really is the curmudgeon of the whole thing. The economics are so plain and simple. As we've seen, every state that's done this has been generating millions and millions of dollars every few months, every quarter. And then one state, three states have been following suit. It's a simple economic issue, as well as we were starting to hint about the prison system that is overtaxed. It's a matter of time, I'm sure. But yes, I understand. McConnell is the blockage.
I think marijuana legalization is kind of a balancing point for the future of freedom. As long as they can criminalize something that doesn't harm anyone, and they basically interfering in a person's right to consciousness, really. Then I fear that this is an issue that the future of freedom may hinge upon, especially with the rapid acceleration of artificial intelligence and technology. They say that computers could become sentient and self-improving within 25 years. And I think it's important that we expand individual rights before that happens. And so that's not a lot of time. And I think marijuana is an important issue in cognitive freedom. And privacy are things that need to be expanded, especially with the growing technological capabilities that we continue to innovate.
Yeah, the prohibition of anything has never proven to be long-lasting or positive in the long run. Prohibition of alcohol, for instance, and this is just another one of those situations. And well, this is the situation, I guess. And I think people have become enlightened to this, as we've been and as you were just discussing, to these individual rights and to the lack of real risk or danger of the chemicals and of the drug itself. I think people are catching on to that, and we've been seeing the wave come across the United States. And of course, Canada, in what, 2018, the whole country went legal?
Yeah, exactly. They certainly have. And so they've seen a drop in marijuana treatments at the same time. And less kids are using cannabis, and all the awful things they told us were going to happen turn out to be the exact opposite of the truth.
Isn't that always the case?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your public access show, your Cannabis Common Sense. Love the name, by the way. You've been doing this weekly since 1996. Is that correct?
Yeah. We started in October of 1996, and we've done over 1,050 shows so far. It's a weekly show. We interview people. Lately, I've been interviewing some people in Mexico via Skype. We up until the pandemic, we recorded live in a pretty advanced studio, public access studio in Portland. Portland has a pretty amazing public access system of four studios that are constantly being upgraded. But I've been doing it weekly for many years. Almost everybody you can think of in marijuana legal reform has been on the show in one form or another.
Where might listeners look up that show? Is it online?
Yeah. We stream it live on Facebook, and then we back it up on YouTube. And so the live stream is at 8 p.m. on Friday nights, and that is at facebook.com/restorehemp. So /restorehemp. And then the archive, which doesn't get that many hits these days, but has a small but loyal audience, is youtube.com/cannabiscommonsense. pretty easy to remember. It's all spelled out, lowercase, no spaces. YouTube.com/cannabiscommonsense.
Once again, Paul Stanford, the cannabis man of many talents, and Mr. Cannabis himself. I do really appreciate you being here. Is there any other website where people might be able to find you, to find where you're at and what you're doing and how people might get involved with the organizations, maybe in their own state?
Sure. The best site is crrh.org. I've actually had that one as a web domain since the early 90s.
One more time.
crrh.org. And so I started putting hemp news out on Usenet news groups in the late 80s, before there was even a web browser out there, which was like that happened in 94. And in the about 1998, our website went through a redesign, and we won just tons of web design awards back then for that site, crrh.org. Then our medical clinics, it's easiest to access them through thc-foundation.org. That's thc-foundation.org. And personally, I am found at D. Paul Stanford, just D as in dog, but Paul, P-A-U-L, Stanford, like the university, no relation. And so you can find that on Facebook and YouTube and Instagram, all those various social media, and as my email address as well.
In all of your travels, Paul, you've got to meet some of the big names. That is the Willie Nelsons, the Snoop Dogs, the Cheeches, the Chongs. Is that correct?
I have, yeah. You know, I was honored to meet Willie Nelson back in 1990. This fellow in Kentucky introduced him to me, and so I got to hang out with Willie a little bit back in 1990. And then in 2011, I started helping him and his group that tours with him get medical marijuana authorizations. And I was their grower, actually, under Oregon's medical marijuana law from 2011 till they made that illegal. The legislature of Oregon changed the law, so you had to be a resident to do that. The Supreme Court had ruled that you didn't have to be a resident about 10 years before that, but the legislature changed that. So I couldn't be a grower for Willie anymore at that point. But I've also met and hung out a bit with Woody Harrelson. And I was with Woody Harrelson on June 1st of 1996 when he planted 6 hemp seeds in Lee County, Kentucky. And eventually he was acquitted at his second trial after it was appealed the first conviction. And it was quite a splash at the time when Woody Harrelson planted those seeds.
Yeah, I think I remember
that. I've
got
to meet a lot of different folks over the years. I met this fellow named Jack Herrer down in 1982 in Los Angeles. And we both moved to Oregon to work on the Oregon Marijuana Initiative in 1984. You know you're getting old when you get the wrong decade.
Jack Herrer, that's a famous name in these circles.
That's true. He wrote a pretty famous book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes about the history of hemp. And I had helped him with that. I'm in the dedication. And so a lot of these other names as well. So
I really do appreciate your time and your input and your cannabis warrior activism. You're one of the greats around here, and I am glad and honored to be able to talk with you today.
Well, you're very welcome, Trevor. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to my interview with Paul Stanford. Music is produced by J. Cody Robertson. I'm Trevor Collins. Be sure to look for more episodes wherever you get your podcasts at times like now. I'll be talking with you next time.
This
this is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
Hi, it's Joseph with Art Focus on KBOO. Don't forget, we're in the middle of our end of the year drive, so please show your support by becoming a member today at kboo.fm/give. Thanks.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hand him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are the photographer Jason Hill, the DJ Ambush, and Tyra Lovato, who's the curator and administrator for Oxmute, a gallery within the Portland Art Museum. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
So, if people don't know, Oxmute is a gallery within the Portland Art Museum. If you go in there, there's usually a DJ set up with no one there. You know, it's very quiet. But right now there's a show called In My Skin, and it's photography by Jason Hill, and it's pictures of black people, they're portraits, and they're very stylized. I think each one has its own rules, but they share certain rules. So Jason, just give me the concept behind that part of your show, and then Ambush and Tyra, maybe you can tell us a little bit about Oxmute.
Okay, well, the concept behind it was